Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Echo page. Echo membership will provide you with unlimited access to other educational material, as well as a huge number of other advantages. Please check this out at www.echo-ibd.eu.
The current podcast summarizes relevant aspects from the recent update on the opportunistic infection guideline. Introduction and broad use of new immunomodulatory agents, including biologicals and JAK inhibitors, have revolutionized treatment of IBD during the past decades. With such immunomodulation, the potential for opportunistic infection is a key safety concern for patients with IBD. Opportunistic infections pose particular problems for the clinician. They are often difficult to recognize and are associated with appreciable morbidity or mortality, because they are potentially serious and hard to treat effectively. The first guideline on opportunistic infection was published in 2009, followed by an update in 2014. New evidence in this field, as well as new vaccination strategies in immunocompromised IBD patients, led the ECHO to update the previous consensus meeting on opportunistic infections in IBD. In the current guideline update, clinically relevant PICO questions in opportunistic infections in IBD, as well as in the field of vaccination, have been raised based on the previous guidelines and based on new relevant clinical questions in this field. The working group consisted of gastroenterologists, virologists, infectious disease experts, and pediatricians. The main sections of the opportunistic guideline include general aspects of immunosuppression and other risk factors of opportunistic infections, an update on viral infections, Mycobacterium tuberculosis, bacterial as well as parasitic and fungal infections, vaccination and safety screening. Independent risk factors for opportunistic infections in IBD patients are well known and include malnutrition, older age, overweight BMI, congenital immunodeficiency, HIV infection, chronic diseases, diabetes, bowel surgery, IBD activity, and last but not least, the use of immunosuppressive medication. And with this regard, combination therapies are particularly associated with an increased risk. In the updated guideline, immunosuppressive drugs have now been categorized into 4 degrees of immunosuppression. First, no immunosuppression. Second, selective immunosuppression. Third, low immunosuppression. And fourth, moderate to severe immunosuppression. Since data directly comparing different conventional immunosuppressive drugs and different biologics are limited, it is not possible to clearly differentiate between moderate systemic immunosuppression and severe systemic immunosuppression. While calcineurin inhibitors such as cyclosporine or tacrolimus, anti-TNF, tofacitinib and ustekinumab are all considered moderate to severe immunosuppression, for other agents, the degree of immunosuppression depends on mechanism of action, the dose, duration, and route of administration. Distinction between no selective or low degree of immunosuppression versus moderate to severe immunosuppression has direct clinical implications, not only as it allows to estimate the risk of opportunistic infections. While live vaccines are contraindicated in patients with moderate to severe immunosuppression, administration of vaccines can be discussed on a case-by-case basis in patients with selective or low-degree immunosuppression if benefit from vaccination outweighs the risk. Methotrexate as well as azathioprine can be considered low-degree immunosuppression depending on the dose. Long-term maintenance treatment with topical oral budesonide up to doses of 6 mg per day did not result in higher rates of infections compared to placebo. At the other end of the spectrum, treatment with systemic steroids with doses of more or equal 20 mg for more than 2 weeks can be considered moderate to severe immunosuppression. A big section in the updated guideline is covering viral, bacterial, and fungal opportunistic infections. With regard to viral infections, serological screening for hepatitis A, B, and C, HIV, Epstein-Barr virus, CMV, Varicella-Zoster virus, and measles virus, in the absence of documented past infection for vaccination for the latter two, is recommended in all IBD patients at baseline and especially prior to or during immunosuppressive treatment. pap smear of human papillomavirus screening is also recommended. It is out of the scope of this podcast to cover all relevant aspects of viral, bacteria and fungal opportunistic infections, and it is hereby referred to the updated guideline. A brief chapter is focusing on the new SARS-CoV-2 virus and COVID-19 infections. In general, during SARS-CoV-2 pandemic, management of IBD should follow usual standards of care. When SARS-CoV-2 is clinically suspected or when a patient is tested positive for SARS-CoV-2, either symptomatic or asymptomatic, continuation of 5-ASA and immunosuppressive therapy should be considered on a case-by-case basis according to current knowledge. Optimizing IBD care amidst these limitations is discussed in the ECOCOVID Task Force paper, which has recently been published in JCC. An important section is focusing on vaccination strategies in IBD. Please keep in mind that vaccination issues in IBD in general have already been covered by a recent podcast provided by Bramfestocht. Despite the increased risk of infections, several studies have shown that patients with IBD are not vaccinated appropriately. The immunization status of IBD patients need to be markedly improved. The current guideline and overview on the routine vaccination program, as well as an IBD-specific program that is relevant for each patient, will be offered. A few general aspects should be considered in advance. First, the individualized vaccination program should be explained to each patient by the IBD specialist, providing a basis for shared decision-making and be jointly implemented by the primary care physician, the IBD team, and the patient. Second, the vaccination status should be checked early during disease and then in yearly intervals, in particular for IBD-specific vaccination requirements. Third, consider that there is no evidence for inducing a flare by vaccination in IBD patients. Fourth, the success of immunization may be impaired by immunosuppression, for example, hepatitis B virus, in this case, check anti-HBs titer in regular intervals. Fifth, vaccine should be fairly be administered during quotient disease, if possible before starting immunosuppression. Sixth, if vaccination is to be administered during immunosuppression, use the period of lowest immunosuppression, so consider elimination half-life of the drug. Seventh, vaccination of close contacts is highly important and recommended, the so-called cocoon strategy. And last but not least, live vaccines in patients with IBD receiving immunosuppressive therapy are generally considered unsafe. It is recommended to wait for at least 1 to 6 months after termination of immunosuppressant therapy before administration of live vaccine. The decision to administer any live vaccine needs to be considered on a case-by-case basis. There is currently limited clinical data to support the safe use of live vaccine in patients receiving immunosuppressive therapy, and existing guidelines are largely based on expert opinion. The CDC UK Green Book and the European League Against Rheumatism, EULAR, suggest that live vaccination may be safe during low-dose immunosuppression. However, there is still a concern on when to schedule live vaccination in IBD. Ideally, live vaccination should be administered prior to initiation of immunosuppressive therapy. Likewise, when therapy has been interrupted to facilitate administration of live vaccines, immunosuppression should not be recommended until a safe interval has elapsed. In either situation, a minimum interval of 3 to 4 weeks is sufficient to cover the incubation period, and clearance of vaccine virus is advised. While comprehensive data is not available to support shorter intervals for many agents involved, an alternative approach advocates intervals based on the pharmacokinetic and pharmacodynamic data for the drugs. Both drug elimination and immune reconstitution are factors influencing safety. A rule of thumb is using 5 times the elimination half-life of a drug, as there are no significant concentrations of a medication after that time frame. A strategy also used by other guidelines addressing this issue suggests the time frame between stopping immunosuppressive biologics and live vaccination, taking into account elimination half-life of the drug, is provided in the updated guideline. A few vaccination strategies in IBD are now covered in the updated guideline. Herpes zoster has become a relevant side effect during immunosuppressive treatment, in particular in patients treated with JAK inhibitors. a new recombinant herpes zoster vaccination has provided in many European countries. So recombinant herpes zoster vaccination is the preferred vaccine for patients with IBD disease, given its efficacy and safety. If recombinant ERT zoster vaccination is not available, live zoster vaccine is recommended in immunocompetent patients with inflammatory bowel disease aged 50 years and over. Vaccination with recombinant vaccine remains recommended for herpes zoster for patients with IBD receiving immunosuppressive therapy. If recombinant zoster virus vaccine is unavailable, live zoster vaccine may be considered in patients on low-dose immunosuppression. An overview of an adult immunization schedule for patients with IBD is presented in this guideline. Ideally, vaccination history should be obtained at diagnosis and any outstanding vaccination should be administered. Adult immunization schedule for patients with IBD may be divided into a routine vaccination program that covers tetanus, diphtheria, pertussis, measles, mumps, rubella, varicella, polio, and meningococcal disease in patients at high risk of meningococcal disease. The IBD-specific vaccination program covers vaccination against influenza, herpes zoster, pneumococcus, hepatitis B, human papilloma virus, and hepatitis A, depending on the risk status. Vaccination strategies are further stratified into vaccination that required a diagnosis during follow-up or mainly before immunosuppressive therapy. So taken together, the new opportunistic infection guideline updates relevant aspects on bacterial, viral, as well as parasitic and fungal infections. With regard to an increasing number of biologics and other immunosuppressive agents, it is crucial to stratify for the degree of immunosuppression, which is relevant for estimating the individual risk for opportunistic infections, as well as the risk for live vaccination. While live vaccines in IBD, patients with IBD receiving immunosuppressive therapy are generally considered unsafe, in a case-by-case decision administration may be eligible during low-dose immunosuppression and with considering the half-life of the immunosuppressants. Further aspects of the guideline can be looked up in the updated guideline that can be downloaded from the ECHO website. Thank you for your attention.